Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hello, everybody. It's time for another episode of Tennis Bets Live, streaming as always on YouTube, tennis.com, Facebook, and Tennis Bets Twitter. Zachary Cohn, Pamela Maldonado, Kenny Ducey will be joining us shortly. We have a lot to discuss with the Miami Open. We're into week two. There's been upsets. There's been drama. There's been tons of great storylines, cats and dogs living together, everything you want. And we got to break down all the action with our crew. Zico, bottom of the screen right now, Zachary Cohn. A lot of upsets, especially on the women's side. Yesterday, we saw the two favorites just gutted out of the tournament. But what else stood out to you in this jam-packed Miami Open?
Well, you said a couple of like comebacks. I think that both, you know, Garcia and Musetti are both really good stories. Garcia is a player that can play at a top five level when she's on her game. We know the serve is really good. We know that the power game from the baseline is great. She put it all together against Gauff. She has one of these runs, it seems like, every year. Hopefully she doesn't, you know, come back with a dip in level. But I think that was really fun to see her play well. And at the same time, Musetti, who's a player that I think is as talented as anyone on the ATP Tour when we're talking, you know, 23 and under, and, you know, went out, you know, outclassed Shelton in almost every way imaginable. Just a player that's really dangerous when he is playing with confidence. And I do think that, you know, he's probably not going to beat Alcaraz, but I do think he'll show us a little something.
We've seen a couple players, you named two of them that maybe are uneven, maybe are up and down, but they seem like they're redlining and they're factors when they are. So that's something big to see. Pamela Maldonado, again, welcome to the show. Now, there's a lot of pressure. You're doing well, but we know with big results come big expectations. But how are we enjoying this Miami Open so far?
I like this tournament because it's not entirely like what we saw from Indian Wells, which at the beginning of the tournament I said it's basically Indian Wells 2.0, except there have been a little bit of upsets. The rain delay is causing it's not even the rain delay issues, but it's the humidity factor. It really changes how the ball bounces, how the players are changing their tactics when it comes on court. So it is a little different than that of California. And because of that, yeah, like players like Ben Shelton, he was outplayed. Dimitrov winning 6-1, 6-0, that's probably the best match that he's had in I can't remember how long, just from like clean through and through. And then, of course, on the WTA side, man, the volatility of women's tennis. I would not have pegged like Osaka to lose to Garcia. Like that was, I thought it was like, oh, you get through your second round. Cool. It's home run from there. And then nope.
No. Well, we got a lot to get to on this week's show, especially the storylines. But I want to put one of our picks because we have a match in progress. Zico went Mahach over Arnaldi as a straight pick on the odd spread there. It's in good shape right now with the set. I think they're still on serve at the time of this. So we have that, and the live odds right now in that match are in your favor, Zico. So you're riding the check in this one. Two players having their best Miami Open by far. But the man that beat Murray, you liked him in this one to keep it going.
Yeah, Mahach like really beat up on him last year. They played in Dubai in the qualifiers. It was like 6-0, 6-1. You know, I just think it's just a really bad matchup for Arnaldi because Arnaldi has a really solid all-around like baseline game. Like he doesn't make a lot of mistakes, but Mahach is the same, but he has the ability to kind of ratchet it up with the aggression and with the power from the baseline. So I just think it's one where he's just a little bit outmatched along the baseline, and Mahach, you know, has a slight edge on him in hold and break percentage. Tough matchup. I do think that this one's going to hopefully go this way the rest of the match.
Yeah, he redlined. I know that Andy Murray stuff's sad, and we wish him a speedy recovery, but it was 5-3 in that third set tiebreaker, and he played four of the best. Mahach played four of the best points of the entire match, so he absolutely won that match. Nothing was given to him. It was good to see another Czech breakthrough. And what is that, the third Czech guy to beat Rublev in a tournament recently?
Oh, man, yeah, you're right.
He's gonna have an issue with that country going forward. But other storylines to get to on the men's side, there was there've been some upsets, there's been some drama, but right now, Pam, the top three are holding firm. No Djokovic in this tournament. That still puts Alcaraz, Sinner, and Medvedev on a quest. We'll see how it shakes out. But the three favorites going into this tournament on the men's side still alive.
I think right now, if I had to put them in order of based off of this tournament, how well they are playing, it's going to be Alcaraz, Medvedev, and then Sinner. Some of the pace has been taken off of Sinner's ball right now because he has been playing right after the rain delays. So you're not, he's not, his ball's not getting as much pop. He's not having as much power. And you can see it in the MPHs. His RPMs have been lower than that of Indian Wells. So I think these conditions are just kind of making him more of a muted style of play, which would put me of wanting to like Medvedev if I had to rank him in order.
Yeah, the Griegspoor match was tricky because he is a tricky opponent that's played well enough to beat Zverev and Indian Wells. We know how that went, but that wasn't Sinner's best day, but he did find a way through. Mm-hmm. And if he is this great champion, which he's showing himself to be, right, raising your level as the matches go on will be something there. And I also know that Zico, we got the bad stat of the day, which is no American men reached the round of 16 at the Miami Open. So it was a tough one. I know it's, you got to take everything with a grain of salt. Of course, Tommy Paul's injury was brutal and hopefully he's back, but Shelton loses, Fritz bounced early, Tiafo, Eubanks to Zverev. So not a great tournament for the American men.
Yeah, we lost Blanche too in the first round. No, I think that, you know, Paul is probably the player that I trust the most out of all these guys, to be honest. So the fact that he went out with that injury, I feel like you probably could have trusted him to make a mini run.
Yeah, that, again, you know, prayers up for him. He's a trendy pick to be the top-ranked American at the end of the year, and you can send see why.
Only out 2 weeks, I think.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. Shorter than the Murray injury time. And then, of course, Pam Alcaraz still on a quest for, as he calls it, the double sunshine. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting how he manages just the energy level. He's got Musetti coming up. We'll get to it. But so far, so good for Carlitos.
The energy level shouldn't be a non-factor. I thought that his match in the round of 32 against Gael Monfils was going to be like at least a thriller to some sense, because we know that Monfils likes to be a showman, but he got injured. Monfils got injured there in the first service game, second service game that he had very early on. And I think that he stayed out there. I think any other normal player probably would have retired. He didn't look 100% and he didn't really play 100% or to full 100% capacity of what we're used to seeing him. But I think because he's such a showmanship, he wanted to, hey, I have to be here for the fans. We were all expecting this. So, I mean, it was pretty easy breezy for Alcaraz. So energy should be a non-factor heading into this match against Musetti.
It's going to be a fun one. Going to be some shot making for sure, as there always is in a Carlos match, with Musetti playing some of the best tennis of his young career. On the women's side, of course, the storyline, Zico, was what we saw from the top players that were still left in this tournament. Iga and Coco both bounced in round four. Iga was just obliterated by Alexandrova. Ekat has been playing so well at times. She was serving immaculately in that one. The Coco Garcia match was interesting, but we know Garcia redlines and nobody plays tennis like her. That was my takeaway for Caroline Garcia, how aggressive she is coming to net. It's fun when it's clicking, and she's certainly set in her ways.
Yeah, and I think that's why you see runs from her. It's like that isn't sustainable over the course of a whole season, but you do get the good from Garcia. Mm-hmm. We saw it yesterday. I do think that with Iga, it's kind of like we get a bad performance from her once a month. She flushes it. She wins the next tournament. With Coco, I don't know. Like, I'm a little concerned about her. Like, I think that if she didn't win the U.S. Open last year, we'd be having a different conversation about her. I just think that there are too often, you know, she just gets bullied off the court from her forehand side. The errors kind of rack up. Like, I just think that her season as a whole has been a bit of a letdown.
Yeah, these are two different cases, right? Yeah. Iga won Indian Wells, went to round four in Miami, and we're going to clay. So zero worry with Iga there, but we'll see. We got the future odds to look to here on Tennis Bets Live, and we'll start with the women because, you know, the volatility of what's happened, as Pam said, but also what these future markets look like now and how much value there still might be. We got matches starting in a little bit here with Azarenka and Putintseva as the first matchup, but here's your quarterfinal future favorites. Rybakina slides right into that plus 120 role. She looked great against Madison Keys. Pagula, number two, followed by Sakkari. Alexandrova, Collins, Azarenka, Garcia, and Putintseva there. So looking at this, Pam, and I'll just throw it to you for a second. First thing that stands out to me is number one and number three on this play each other in the next round. So I think there's still a ton of value.
I think because women's is so volatile, like Sakkari at 8.5-1, that's interesting to me. She's playing really well. Rybakina was somebody that I had to maybe make the final, and this is why I liked Osaka to win her quarter, because, oh, she's not going to face Rybakina until she gets deep into the tournament. But right now I think Rybakina is like definitely the key player to win. But it's just the way that it's been going right now with WTA, put a name into a hat. go with what's giving you more value. There he is.
Yeah, look what the cat
drew. Flight back from Miami real quick.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, good morning. Hopefully you're doing well. Kenny Ducey joining the show. Hope Curious George is doing well too. What do you think about the women's future market here?
Yeah, we were just talking about Maria Sakkari. I think she's playing really good tennis right now. We talked about her last week as well. And I just feel like the big wins continue to pile up for her. Also, you know, Ange Jabeur was never going to be an obstacle here. So glad we got that out of the way and we don't have to talk about it anymore. But yeah, I mean, you know, the woman that beat Ange Jabeur, Aven Eason, I thought Sakkari looked really good against her in Australia and it's just continued to get better. We know she has the talent, obviously. And I think on these courts, they're not quite the quickest, but you know, they are low bouncing and she kind of likes that. She likes to, you know, play on a little altitude clay, a little faster clay. French Open back in the COVID times when we played on the cold dirt, she had a good showing there. So I think these are good conditions for her to jump in with a quick take on this draw. So I kind of feel like that's where the value is right now. I know she's the third favorite, so it doesn't feel correct, but I'm with Pam. Like Rybakina was someone I was looking at in Indian Wells as a former champion, someone who I think is due to win one of these big tournaments because she's playing pretty well, just has had a couple of tough losses. So I think that's probably who wins. But, you know, I think Sakkari is a really, really interesting play in the futures market with a couple of these titans out.
Yeah, yeah. And Zico, we talked about a player that red lines and isn't sustainable for a full season. Garcia at plus 1900 as the second last odds here. I mean, worth a flyer at the very least, maybe a sprinkle. Well,
I think the problem I have with that is I really like Collins to win this tournament at 10-1 now. I think that she's playing unbelievable. She's playing at home. I think that this is a match, like, you know, a tournament that she's going to want to win before she goes out and retires. This is one that she really likes. And I think that, you know, with no Iga who beats up on Collins occasionally, like there's really no one in here that I would say is definitely going to beat her when they step out on the court.
Yeah.
No. And the matchups thing, as we mentioned, I mean, Azarenka plays Potentsova later today and, you know, that favors her given what she can bring to the table too. So I don't know. I mean, this could be a strategy where you just spread some stuff out. You pick two or three from this board, non-favorites, obviously. But no, I mean, look, Rybakina yesterday showed why in the match against Keys, she gave her very little when she's serving on. She's clearly a top three player, if not better, in the world.
Yep, that's why I do have a parlay later. I don't want to spoil it, but I do have Rybakina to beat Sakkari.
Okay, so there's one. You spoiled half of it. on the men's future side, here are the top favorites going forward. Again, there's an interesting element of this that we'll get to later in the show, but you have Alcaraz, Sinner, Medvedev, then you have Zverev at the four spot, followed by Dimonor, and then Hubie, Casper Ruud, and Grigor Dimitrov. And that is Hubie without his hat on, we have confirmed. So that's the version of Hubie there. But Pam, looking at these odds, you got the clear favorites, but anything on the back end or in the middle end that stands out?
Nope. I'm sticking with my futures prediction of Alcaraz. I think Sinner, I'm not seeing his full strength of power. And I think because of that, Alcaraz, these conditions still very much heavily suit his style of play. Medvedev to me is the interesting one. And he was my, to make it into the final prediction in the futures. So I think we're going to see an Alcaraz Medvedev in the final again. Nothing's really changed.
You know, well, I'm monitoring Medvedev there because I believe, like we talked on this show, Medvedev on hard courts at a certain number, and I think we might be at it, is value. It's a value play. So that's the only thing I'm looking at. But Kenny, your thoughts going into the final stages here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we probably see Medvedev Sinner, and we've seen it too many times. We know what's going to happen, I think, in that match. Jannik Sinner is going to win, and then if that happens, you know, we have a very, very interesting setup in the final here where there's a number of players, I think, who come through. I don't know if Sasha Zverev survives Karen Khachanov today, but if he does, you know, I think on a little bit quicker of a court and somewhere where he's maybe going to have a little more success charging the net as he's done against Carlos over the years now, that could be a match that's very difficult for Carlos, and we've seen him struggle this year already. So I think that's a dangerous spot. I don't quite think the Musetti match is a dangerous spot given what we've seen out of both of those guys since Musetti, the first two times they've played, made things interesting. So it does feel like Carlos, yes, should get to the semis pretty easily. And then even then, I don't know, maybe Zverev gives him a little bit of a trouble, but I think we're probably looking at Carlos met Jannik again, but this time in the final. And I think in that match, you'd have to favor Sinner. So I do feel like with the futures market, even though he did lose last week to Carlos in Indian Wells. We just literally saw this last year where he had a lot of trouble with Carlos at Indian Wells and then smoked him in Miami. I think it's a very similar situation this time around as well. So I think you'd have to bet on history to repeat itself.
I mentioned something interesting, Zico, before we move along, and it was that Hubie has slightly, you know, more favored odds than Dimitrov, but he is the underdog in that match. So as another betting expert, I just wanted to point that out to you.
Yeah, I guess I just looked at it a little bit more. I think maybe it has something to do with Hubie being a better matchup for Carlos than Dimitrov is. We've seen Hubie give him trouble in the past, so I wonder if it's, you know, has more to do with next round than it does to, you know, anything else.
Yeah.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
All right, well, hey, we've got a lot to discuss here on Tennis Bets Live with Kenny Ducey, Zachary Cohn, and Pamela Maldonado. Remember, you can watch us on all the platforms, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and listen to us on all your podcast platforms as well.
Shout out to our friends on Twitter.
Yeah, shout out to everybody out there that supports the show.
I'm not being held captive, although it may look like it. I just work at a Subway.
Yeah. It's already open as well. All right, so we got a lot of picks to get to. One in progress, as we mentioned. We'll see if Zico could bring home his first match of the day. That match still going in his favor. But all right, Pam, we've got a couple to get to from your perspective. And the first one that I have here is an over. So we're going back to the over well. Casper and Nico Jarry, we're going over 24 games in this one. You like it to go on?
I like a few options in this, and I'm going with the conservative. Casper Ruud, Nicolai Jarry, over 24 games. The Chilean, he really has a chance to upset here, which is why I like him. And the way that he's going to have that chance is he has a big serve, powerful ground strokes, and an aggressive baseline. It's that serve. Jarry is 6'6". That's a lot of free points that he's getting under his belt. He relies on that service game to dominate. In this tournament, he already has 31 aces, 3 tie breaks in just 6 sets that he has played. Casper Ruud, he's been inconsistent. We talk about it weekly. His weakness right now has been in that return game. He's going the distance against players who have an equally big serve or even sub below that. Chris Eubanks, Ben Shelton, Gal Monfils. Jarry, when it comes to breaking serve, he's had a lot of less success. And he should have less success against Casper Ruud because Ruud at least has a pinpoint serve, followed it up with a ridiculous power on his forehand. And if you look at the history between these two players, overs, tiebreaks. They played twice last year on clay, and now you're getting a faster surface midday. The other options that I liked was the first set tiebreak plus 185, or for this to go a full 3 sets at plus 125. But I'm going conservative, and I'm going with just the over.
Okay. Well, look, I think this is always a good play for a guy in Jarry's case who has a big serve and can always make these sets competitive. Kenny, we've also seen Casper Ruud, who won his 100th hard court match, which is nothing to slack about or bat your eyes at, but he has lost sets in this tournament and other hard court events. So I get where Pam's coming from. I think this is a solid conservative play.
Yeah, putting the words right in my mouth, Casper Ruud, 3 out of his last 4 matches have gone to 3 sets, and I think we've started to see a little bit of that stressful Casper Ruud tennis return. I did have to go to an over yesterday to get back on the winning side of things with Korda playing Hubie Hurkacz, and unfortunately we saw what happened to Sebastian Korda, but I do feel like, yeah, that's not a bad play here, given the fact that Jarry is starting to play a little bit better. I've continued to say it, and I sound like an idiot because he wins, but I do feel like this is not the same Nico Jarry as we saw last year. I mean, we saw this guy really play probably the best tennis of his career before. I mean, if you're not counting when he was doing steroids, but yeah, I think that this is probably where I would go in this match as well. I think we're going to see, I mean, Casper's been a little bit better on return this year, but I still think we'll probably see at least one tie break. So I'm actually curious what the odds are on just a tie break in general. It's probably like minus 140. But if it, you know, if you get that or better, I would like that as well, but it could be even steeper given what we see with the odds usually. But yeah, that's a match that's very interesting. I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to go deep, and we'll see if Casper survives here. But like I said, with our handicap on the draw, not really quite sure if it matters, because that should be the Medvedev quarter. I know, you know, Dominic Kupfer's serving his brains out right now, but I don't think Med's going to lose that match.
All right. Well, we'll get to some picks in a second. Zico, you're almost rounding third and heading home for the first cash of the day.
Yeah, he just went up a break. Hopefully, right. Get it.
All right, it's looking good.
Glad I stayed off Rinaldi there.
All right. Well, Kenny, let's go to one of your deucey dimes of the day. Not what the people were expecting. You zigged when everyone thought you were going to zag. We're going with
Olszewski. That's right, and that's how we win, baby. I like Hubie Hurkacz to win this match in a pick'em. I think you can get him around plus money right now. And the reason why we saw that strange price in the futures market that Zico was alluding to is because Hubie is 0-4 in his career against Grigor Dimitrov, and that's certainly going to play a factor into the futures market, because they do feel like, yes, if he wins this match, he's got a decent chance, but the price is always going to reflect what the current matchup is, and especially if you're an underdog, that's going to play a big factor. So yeah, I mean, this has been historically a tough matchup for him. I will point out that in Rotterdam last year, it was a very, very tight match, two tie breaks. One of them was on clay. Rotterdam's pretty slow. Paris Masters also slow. That went three sets last year. He lost in the quarters. And of course, Paris is traditionally a very volatile tournament with, first of all, Grigor Dimitrov playing the tennis of his career, but second of all, most guys going in tired. And we were talking about Grigor coming into the Australian Open, all of us, about just, I mean, how the hell do you fade this guy? So I do feel like this is traditionally been a matchup where Hubie, yes, he's never won, but he's come very, very close. Deciding tiebreak in that clay match I mentioned, which is not the strong suit of Hubie. And then back in 2021 at Indian Wells, another slow court, deciding set tiebreak. So I think Hubie finally gets on the board here. We know he's won this tournament before. He beat our beloved Jannik Sinner years ago, and he has traditionally been an unbelievable player in America, particularly in Florida. His record is insane. So I think if he's going to beat Grigor for once, it's going to be in sort of a home court advantage situation for him, because he loves playing in America. America Hurkacz, it's a bad nickname, but as my friend Brian Clark called him a couple years ago. So I don't know what it is, man, but he loves playing stateside. So I think he wins this match. I think Grigor's a little bit off where he was last year when these guys met last in Rotterdam and then also in Paris. So a little bit quicker surface. Give me Hubie during the day to win this, and hopefully he takes the hat off.
The crowds in Miami have been good, by the way. Like Shelton, yeah. Musetti turned into a Davis Cup match. Jari has a cheering section following him around. Like, you just don't know what you're going to get. It's awesome.
The Jari crowd is wild.
Match, yeah. And then obviously, of course, the Colombians as well. With Galan, always.
It has been insane. I wonder if there's a bump because Dimitrov just basically won a squash match in his last. He's like Goldberg 98 right now. So, all right.
Jannik Hanfman. Yeah, what an impressive win there.
Congrats. I mean, you see a score line and people look at it a certain way. All right. We got one more pick from Zico. Trying to find it here. Yeah, he's got the parlay you alluded to. Zico 6-star parlay. We're going with Azarenka and Rybakina to win at -120. This is like a Pam move, by the way. We're going just taking chalk and parlaying them together.
Yeah, I like couldn't find much that I liked on this card, so I forced in a second play. I think that Azarenka just, you know, 2-0 against Putintseva. I think that she has too much power for her, and you know, she's had success at Miami Open as well. She loves this tournament. And Rybakina Sakkari, I just think that Sakkari's, you know, a little inflated from the Indian Wells run. I think that her, you know, you look at Tennis Abstract, her break percentage is just unsustainably high. Now she plays a really good server, so I do think it's going to be a tough matchup for her. I think it's great that she's playing well, you know, to start the year. I think that it's definitely something that we'll see the rest of the season, but I do think that she's not on the level of Rybakina, and Rybakina did play very well against Keys.
Azarenka and Putintseva are doubles partners, and they were practicing this morning, so I don't know about that move, especially if from, I think, yeah, I don't know, that's a weird one, but yeah, that's the solid odds there. But you know, hey, Sakkari is the third favorite in this tournament. So if she wins it, she's going to be the first favorite, most likely. So yeah,
we'll see. I will say a little inside baseball, as you mentioned, Mitch. I mean, you saw Tommy Paul and Daniil Medvedev last week. That was a weird match. Tommy was able to make inroads on the Medvedev serve in the first set, and it's because those guys practiced together on the surface. It's also important when it's on the same surface. And then I do feel like the underdog normally gets a little bit of an advantage sometimes, especially it's usually just on returning the serve. I would feel like sometimes serving, like the other player will try different things out on return, or you know, the rallying, like the practice points they're playing, you know, they're obviously calling their own lines, and it's not totally it's not totally engaging, but like, you know, you get a good read on the other player's serve. So I, especially in a situation with Azarenka, who does rely on her serve a little bit, I don't know. It could be interesting, but I do. What a surprise. I do agree with Zico on this parlay. I like it.
Agreement's not the best thing in the history of this show. Just point that out there. All right, so we're gonna go to another one of Pam's picks, the second pick of the day on the men's side, and we're gonna go with this one. We're gonna go with Morozin plus 1.5 sets. We'll fix that there for a second. Minus 126 is the update, but I'm not sure what number you got it at, Pam. But
it was minus 110. Okay. That's why I went with it, because it was a cheaper price. But Marazan, I think he's a Hungarian that can upset here. The price was 250 for him to be an outright underdog to Alex Diminar, and I'm not quite sure that I can get it to the window with that. So instead, I'm going to take Marazan to win a set and to at least keep this competitive. His drop shot is really good. We talk about Garritos having a great drop shot. His is like equally as impressive. He hammers that forehand. His inside-in forehand, man, it is such a thing of beauty. It has power. It has control. And what I really like from him is that defense. He can take the ball on the rise. He dictates points. And what we've seen from the 24-year-old, he gets hot. He can be competitive against a big server like Hubert Hurkacz, who we're just talking about. Power players like Casper Ruud. He defeated Diminar back in Shanghai, and he defeated a backboard in Roberto Bautista Agut. So he's having competitive losses or wins against all types of players. Diminar's strength of schedule post Rotterdam, it's been less than appealing to me. So I think we're getting a overvalue on Diminar based on his win-loss record of the year. Of course, it's fantastic, 19-5 in 2024. But the reason why I like him to at least take a set, it's going to be 70% humidity. I'm going to anticipate a much slower ball. The adjustments of timing and power is going to be what pushes this to three sets.
Yeah. The one match, and I don't mind this pick. I think this has got long match written all over it. But Kenny, do you put any head-to-head into the history of this match? Because we know that Diminar has been playing well. But before you got on, we talked about players that are redlining in this tournament, right, and how sometimes you just have to look at recent form and not just what has happened in the past. So where do you put the history of these two having that one match?
Yeah, I mean, I did mention it when I faded him with our boy, who we never mentioned, but I always make sure to mention, Alex Kovacevic, excuse me. I said, like, Morozin just plays his best tennis in bunches. He'll have random good weeks. He has about – he had three last year. Maybe he'll have more this year as he grows into the tour. Yeah, you know, these guys did play a banger in Shanghai last year, and Morozin ended up coming through it, and obviously it's worth putting stock into because – that was sort of, as we saw, Diminar transform into this top 10 player. I am a little concerned for Morozin with his, like, loopy forehand. It's not the best shot. He has to flatten it out. And when you look at the drop shot that Pam mentioned he's going to be playing, Diminar loves to play this slice down the line, the backhand slice down the line now. I'm curious how he handles that off his back foot, trying to hit lobs, you know, or passes, like, from his back foot. So that could be interesting, a little inside baseball, but I don't know if I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to just say Morozin pulls the upset because he won in Shanghai last year. Although, as you mentioned, like, we do see with head to heads a lot of times, if a guy, an underdog like that, does win the first time, normally the next match is a very cagey affair until the favorite, the better player, figures it out. And then, like, the third time they'll play, you'll see a straight set win for Diminar. So that's generally the arc that these things can follow. If a player's just still trying to figure it out, we did see, like I mentioned earlier, with Musetti and Alcaraz, right? The first time they played, Musetti won easily. And then the second time was a tight three-setter. And then all of a sudden, Alcaraz just figured it out and won with ease the next few times. So that could be a similar arc here. But there's many plays on this board I hate more than Morozin to win a set.
Yeah, and maybe there is another bump there. I mean, he destroyed Holger Rune, but what was Holger's status that whole match?
Oh, Holger was like that. I'm not even counting that as a win. Like, I'm counting that as a walkover. that was a non-factor. When I was looking at the matches, I was like, okay, yeah, ignore this one. And when I look at match history in tennis, it's the same as I do in the PGA and a player on course history. It is not a factor at all that I'm weighing heavily. It's just the familiarity. Have you at least played each other to at least know what you to expect or what you can expect? I'd rather have a player face an opponent prior than both of them being brand new. Those are the matches that I like to stay away from.
Unless as Alexander Bublik would say, what is this draw?
I was just going to say, unless they hate each other, then I'll look into the head-to-head and be like, okay, maybe there's some bad
This isn't here. Tommy Paul.
No. Shout out to him, man. Hopefully he's doing all right. And then the last one, we got another, we got a Ducey Moneyline dime here.
Yes.
We're going with one that I think some people might have called, but some people might not have, given the history. But we're going with Kachanov at plus 176 versus Zverev, the fighter. Because that's what he just fights out there. He's always in the battle against the Zverev that's advanced, but maybe not Kenny in the best form.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they say about Kachanov. I remember a few years ago, like minutes before he smashed his racket, one of the commentators on Tennis TV was like, oh, he's the optimist, that Karen Kachanov. And then, you know, that is kind of how he is, right? He's always optimistic that he can win a match. And I think sometimes it gets away from him. You know, I mean, he lost us a lot of money collectively on Emil Roussevori match in Hong Kong earlier this year. But look, he does fight. And Zico and I were talking about this before the tournament started, that this was a target for us in this quarter to win this quarter. You know, a guy that really has just flown under the radar over the last year because he had that injury. He was out many months last year, and around the injury, you know, it obviously took him about a month to get back to playing Karen Khachanov tennis. But, you know, US Open, he comes out. I don't think there were any expectations on him. Good showing there. And a guy that, if you look before the injury, was really pushing to be back to a top 15 or even a top 10 level, where we once did see him when he beat Novak Djokovic years ago at the Paris Masters to win that championship. So, you know, I think this is a very dangerous spot. You mentioned Zverev not in the best form. I do feel like if he comes through this match and finds it, which we do know, so many of the top players can just find their form after a few weeks. They get comfortable with the surface. They turn it on, you know. The matches get harder. They know what's expected of them. But this is going to be a very difficult one. You know, Khachanov's won two out of their last three meetings. The one time he did lose was in the finals in the Olympics. So it technically doesn't even count. You probably won't even hear them say it's a 3-2 head-to-head because of that, you know, a non-tour event. He did smash him, but that was also after Khachanov beat Novak Djokovic. You know, it denied him the gold medal in the Golden Slam. I believe it was Khachanov who beat Djokovic, by the way. I'm like 90% sure it could have been Zverev, but it was Khachanov, correct? In the Olympics.
Oh, it was Zverev. It's okay. You were going, so I get it.
Maybe he beat Bautista Agut or something. Now I got to look. Oh, Carreño Busta. I was very close. So, so it wasn't a letdown spot. But still, he's had success against Alexander Zverev. And obviously, I'll flip it around and say Alexander Zverev was playing the tennis of his life because he beat Novak Djokovic. And that's why he lost in that final match, in the gold medal match. But no, I think that's a much different scenario. There's a lot different stakes, right? You know, and I think you look at the last two tour level meetings between these two, Khachanov won rather comfortably. So he'll come in with a lot of confidence, and especially with Zverev coming in with a little bit worse form, you know, he's not going to have quite as much confidence. So, I mean, we saw him in Indian Wells, even with some wins, looked really, really tough for him. Obviously the serving conditions weren't ideal, but did not look confident at all in his tennis. So I think Khachanov here is hungrier. I think he's playing for a lot more, and I think he's playing the tennis that we saw him play this time last year right before the injury, that he's balling. So I like Khachanov to win this match. I think this is a very crooked number to hang on him, and shame on the odds makers out there.
Zverev was pushing a little bit in that match against Eubanks too, watching that. Like, it just definitely didn't seem like he was clicking on all cylinders. So there's your game spread at the bottom as well. Zico, we can cash it. You got that pick right pre-match. Good. 3-3. What a run for the Czech kid. And hey, Czech tennis resurgence is going above and beyond.
Yeah, I love the Miami Open. It's been way easier than Indian Wells so far. That was another one. It's just, yeah, like I said before, really bad matchup. Both the matches between them have been really lopsided at this point. Now, yeah, I'm interested in seeing what Mahatch does the rest of the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who's Yuri Lehechka playing today?
Too soon.
Is he not playing?
Hopefully it's Andre Rublev, because they'll probably beat him again. I don't know.
private
Andre Rublev in Miami, by the way. We need to talk about that, because terrible showing here. And then 2 years ago, that was the year where he got, I mean, everyone was like making fun of people thinking Nick Kyrgios was good. That was the year he beat Rude at Indian Wells, but he lost to Kyrgios 2-1 in Miami. He got absolutely destroyed.
Was the year before when he lost to Hubie, and he kind of, that was Hubie going on that tear. Do I have that right? I feel like Hubie was just beating everybody in his way, and Rublev might have been a casualty.
I'll find it right now. But historically, like, I was not surprised to see him lose to Mahach in the first round. He ran into center last year, 6'2", 6'4", but again, non-competitive for a top 10 player, 6'3", 6'11" against Kyrgios in 2022. Did make the semi in 2021. As you mentioned, he lost to Hubie, but what is this draw? Sandgren, Fucevic, Cilic, Korda. That was Korda when he was like 19 too. So, and he barely beat him. So, I think this is next year. I think we once again fire up a fade of Rublev first two rounds, and I think we win one of those.
So props again to Zico calling that first one. We got Medvedev up an early break in his match against Kempfer. Kempfer back on serve. So there you go, two all in that one. Starting it out slowly.
That match, by the way, against Hugo Humbert, I know a lot of people were watching Texas A&M in Houston. I was watching both. And that, he just wasn't missing. Right. He wasn't missing. And we've seen this now all year with Kepfer. The serve is unbelievable. One of the most underrated servers on tour. Even without the serve, in one of those games that got a little dicey late against Hugo, still managed to win and hold and continue to fight. But this guy is playing unbelievable tennis right now. So it would not surprise me if that match gets interesting. I would surprise me a little bit if he did win, but that's a guy to look out for sure. Yeah. As the year wears on, especially in America where he did go to Tulane. People forget, you don't have to be American to go play college tennis.
No, you don't. You just have to be dedicated and learn how to maybe hook a call or two.
Yeah. Arthur Rinderneck, Texas A&M Aggie.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up this show, I did want to get thoughts on the women's quarterfinal matches that are taking place tomorrow. Two today, two tomorrow, and we got a couple Wednesday matches. Zico, you were on the Danielle Collins train to win the tournament. This is an interesting number at -210 for her over Garcia, who's coming in with the hot hand. But any read on this one or, any action that you might have going into it?
The people did want us to mention Collins, by the way, so thank you.
We did mention Collins. I think you just must have missed it.
Yeah, you're right.
The chat. I'm reading the chat.
Yeah, I think that if I wanted to play this, I would just lay off of it and take Collins to win the tournament. Mm-hmm. I don't want to lay -210. I do think she gets through here, but I'm not willing to take her at those odds. But yeah, I do think Collins 10-1 is a really good price.
Insane line, by the way. Have a -210 and a +172. Mm-hmm.
I think it hurts Garcia not playing back-to-back days. I don't think the day off is good. I think she just wants to be out there and playing. And I think... Okay.
I think Zico's strategy is correct. At this point in the women's side, you're gaining more value off of taking a futures option. You can even distribute between two, maybe even three players and come out with plus money.
Yeah. Collins in the last dance, maybe winning Miami as she goes off into the sunset and says,
We've seen her beat better players than Jess Pegula. Yeah. We've literally seen her beat Iga. So
yeah, it's you would expect her to win her next match.
I will say, though, to play devil's advocate here and to make a rare disagreement with Zico, 0-5 against Pegula. So, yes, she has beaten better players than Pegula, but she quite literally has never beaten Pegula.
But this version of Pegula is a little different.
It is. Huh? It is. But as you also said, to use your words against you, lower bounces, that does favor Jess Pegula.
Mm-hmm. Serve looked better too. It's going to take some time, and the biggest thing with her is how she's going to serve under pressure. Hasn't had too much. Beat Emma Navarro in the Battle of the Billionaire Heirs last night, so that was fun to see.
You also can't use that she's 0-5 against Pegula when Hurkacz is 0-6 to Dimitrov. Oh, but I'm on Hurkacz, so it can't work for one side and then not for the other. So you got to have some balance there.
By the way, I liked Collins passing the torch to Peyton Stearns because they are very similar, and I love it.
And she called her little buddy. Didn't say little sister, just my little buddy. It's great. This match is interesting, too. If Alexandrova serves the way she did, I think she's certainly a live underdog. But Pegula assuming the role of a very good player in Miami.
Yeah, it's another one where I don't like the price, but I would expect Pegula to get through. This is probably another one where I'd force a money line play parlay through.
Yeah, as you mentioned, back-to-back semis for her here. And Alexandrova, one of the wasted talents. She's still young enough to make a run. But, we all know that she's been this good her whole career. It's been those big matches where she's just looked nervous. She hasn't found her best stuff. So I would expect that to happen again here today, especially given, when they played 3 years ago, it was very one-way traffic. So I agree, though, disgusting price on -178. To pay for a match that could be highly volatile with the way Pagula's looked, but you would expect her in these conditions that suit her back-to-back semis to win this match.
All right. Well, gang, this has been a fun show. We got a couple more days of the Miami Open. We'll have another tennis bet show in a few days as well. Final thoughts as we gear up for, you know, the bets that you have made, what we're looking for the weekend. Pam, how are you seeing the next couple of days of action in Miami?
I'm rooting hard for Garritos. I know the belief right now is that Sinner is a threat, but he is playing so clean and pure, and it seems as the match progresses, he's getting better and stronger and smarter. He's just I love watching him. And Andy Murray said it right. He's fun to watch. And it's because he's just like, every time you think you've hit a winner, a down-the-line backhand, down-the-line forehand, cross-court, he gets it. Watching him play is just – watching him play. I stop what I'm doing to watch Carlos play.
Okay. Zico, final thoughts going in for a few days here?
I'm hoping we get Medvedev Sinner again, because I do think that, you know, Medvedev, I had Sinner to win the Australian Open, but that might have been a completely different match if Medvedev didn't play for like 40 hours the day before. So he was, you know, came into that match with no energy. He was begging for food by the end of it, but he played really good tennis for two sets. I think that he'll have a good strategy to go against Sinner here. And I do think that there's, you know, a piece of Medvedev that likes revenge. Like he comes back usually and bounces back from losses to these guys pretty well. And yeah, like he's the defending champion in this tournament. No one really seems to be giving him a shot.
Yeah. And he is the master strategist, Zico. So I do feel like those are the matches I look forward to with Med, because you always want to see what his new game plan is to try to beat these guys. Obviously, against Carlos, it was a very similar game plan for Carlos, and a very similar match when they did end up, when he did end up beating him at the US Open. But that was when Medvedev said he was playing his 11 out of 10 tennis. But I do feel like he's going to come up with some sort of different strategy. He is like Djokovic in a way. I know, obviously, they're both good defensive players, but he does really like to figure out a way to beat these guys that are seemingly unbeatable. But to me, the draw is kind of a snooze fest right now. So that's why I want to see Khachanov win this match against Zverev, to give us something interesting to look forward to. Because I think another Grigor Carlos match, Carlos wins, or Hubie Carlos wins. And I want to see him go up against like Khachanov here. Like I want to see a little bit of a spicy matchup, a different matchup in a semi. So that would be fun to see that. And, I mean, Zverev Carlos again would be fun too, but, and we would have that timeless debate that we've had for the last 2 years about how much the head-to-head matters and nitpicking every little loss and win. Carlos was bad. You know, you always got to make excuses for Carlos every time he loses to Zverev. But yeah, I think that would be what I'm rooting for here, because I kind of see everything unfolding as it should, until maybe we get to that quarter and maybe we get to that half.
And we've only got one day of potential rain. If we could just fade that and Matches can stay on track.
Fade Mother Nature. You can't fade Mother Nature, unfortunately.
It's supposed to rain Thursday. Fingers crossed that it doesn't.
Oh, geez. Well, on that note, hey, it was a fun show. We'll be back in a few days here on Tennis Bets. Check us out on all your platforms, YouTube, Tennis.com, Facebook, and Tennis Bets Twitter. For Zachary Cohn, Pamela Maldonado, and Kenny Ducey, I'm Mitch Michaels, your host of the show. Enjoy the tennis. Enjoy all the action in Miami. Make some money, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for watching. Bye.